Hello, and welcome to episode 235 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm concerned about the level of my audio, but I'm here with Matthew Figuera.
You did get very loud all of a sudden.
Yeah, the little peaks on Audition are not where they usually are, and I'm getting a little bit stressed.
For those of you who can't see, Alessandro's background is different because he's moved. He's moved out.
I've moved. I'm
temporarily.
I'm now only in a dungeon. Shani finally said she was done with me. And
in the basement, he goes.
Yeah.
He's gone full
I wish
circle.
He had done that before we had paid a bunch of money for like wedding deposits, though. That would have helped.
It's too late now.
Yeah, too late now, all that money.
You've gone full circle. You're back where it all started. Back home.
Yeah, with the parentals.
This is the origin episode.
People are really going to think that I've actually moved back home. Moved back home. No. I'm just house-sitting.
What happened? Tell us.
We're just now, been house-sitting for the week.
We're now relationship back in my old abode. Podcast. Tell us what happened.
God,
let's talk you through that.
Oh,
I have a
God,
question from... Well, girlfriend dumped me, 1, 2, 3, 4. They say.
What a great email. I love that.
My best is on Reddit when... how often do you use Reddit? Do you use Reddit at all? Like personal browsing?
Very. I use Reddit for when I'm trying to look for an answer to a problem. Like I Google something and then I'll go to Reddit for the answer. That's pretty much it.
But there's two subreddits. So there's the am I the arsehole?
I know that.
Which is just great for reading stories and be like, yeah, you're the arsehole. Like, no, you're not.
I swear half that shit is fake. Some of those stories
some of it's fake.
Nonsense.
But there's another one called TIF, you're like, today I fucked up. And then it's a whole story. But like 90% of those posts are like, throw away account for obvious reasons. And it's like, and it is like that, like, throwaway account like I cheated on my girlfriend, I really messed up, blah blah blah. And then always with Artville, not always but most times with Artville, the top comment is like username checks out because the person's made the name like I cheated on my girlfriend 3-5 or something.
Oh god
like it's a throwaway account but they obviously then lean into whatever they're talking about. So yeah,
why are people like this? Why are they like this?
It's great.
My god.
Like today, I farted in a meeting and top comment, like username checks out. It's like meeting farter 55.
Like, dart why? Dropper 22.
It's like, why are you like that? Just like use your original username. It's cool.
I must confess, I had this, I don't know if I'm getting old. It probably is a getting old thing. But there have been times where I've been in a public setting. Sometimes the office, and I've coughed, and that cough, that motion has just forced me to lose the inhibitions to hold in a fart, and that thing just comes up at the same time. And I never know at that very moment, did the cough mask it? Was it loud enough of a cough, or was the fart too bad? And I'll never know.
You'll never know. You are
unless
the,
someone actually fucking looks
nah,
at me
no,
and is like,
what
the fuck?
What your username is on Reddit. Meeting Farter 55. Who knew?
I'm getting great. Old, Matthew. It's a sign. Know. It's not it the is. Sore back. It's that. Yeah.
Somebody made a comment this week. I can't even remember. And I was like, God, I'm old.
So, oh, yeah.
It's happening now. I'm that person. Like, remember? Oh, it is also, it is like, we've been listening. The days I go into the office, we're listening to radio stations called Absolute Radio. It's like it's a UK brand, I guess. And you can pay, they've got a premium version where there's no adverts, but there's just the.
Oh, is it like an internet radio station?
Yeah, it's like an internet radio station. But they've set it up that you can literally play by decade. So it's like Absolute Radio's 80s, Absolute Radio's 90s, whatever, which is really cool. But then we were listening to Absolute Radio Noughties, which is the OOs of the, you know, music era.
Is that what they called? The Aughties?
No, the Noughties. I think they just call it that.
Oh, the Noughties.
The Noughties. Okay. And like a song came on, it was like Green Day or something. And then we're like, oh man, what a song. Oh, sorry, it was Linkin Park. Like, oh, what a song. And then you just pause like, the song came out like 20 years ago.
Oh yeah.
It hurts so much.
Yeah,
it hurts.
It's like all the Green Day vibes you used to jam to, or like Linkin Park's Meteora.
But the scary thing is, because I know, I'm like, yeah, the early 2000s, I associate that with like high school, just, you know, early varsity days. And I'm like, oh my God, I started high school over 20 years ago. Which is just, you too.
Oh my God, yeah. I'm getting close there, to that.
Yeah, when you turn like 33, like, 34, you're going to be like, oh my God, 20 years ago I started high school.
Yeah, I'm like 2 years away from that. That's, I don't want to think about that. No, that's nuts. That's kind of insane. Yeah. I think my brain turned off to that sort of shit when I realized I'd been like out of school longer than I was in school.
Oh yeah.
And now I'm like fast approaching the point where I've been out of varsity longer than I was in varsity, which is,
yeah,
I don't want to think about that either. So yeah.
Getting old, man.
Scary time. Time just, it continues trucking on and it takes no prisoners.
Does not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what else doesn't take prisoners?
I was just waiting for it.
The amount of video games you need to talk about. Holy shit.
Tax people.
Let's check for Jed. We talk about video games. My God. The IRS is coming for you.
SARS.
Lots of games to chat about.
So many this week. You finished
two of them.
I did.
Which one do you want to go for?
Let's just start with old Starfield. Let me make a timestamp. I regrettably do not have footage to back this up with.
How dare you?
How dare I? I rolled credits in Starfield. And let me just come out and say, full context, my playthrough was sub 20 hours, which is very short for a Bethesda game. Like, I acknowledge this. I played the game, you know, I think the strength with a Bethesda game or any open world RPG, you know, it often lies in the side quests. However, mm-hmm. I looked at the October release schedule and I thought, you know what, I need to finish Starfield, else I'll never get back to it, or it'll be really difficult to get back into it, you know, in November, December, whenever in future, because there's just too many games coming out. Mm-hmm. Like, to recap, there's Assassin's Creed, there's Spider-Man 2, there's a new Mario, there's Alan Wake 2, like, and there's some indie gems, like Cocoon dropped, which was not at all on my radar. Now I want to play that. So just that context, just if you're wondering, why would you speedrun, you know, quotes and quotes, speedrun Starfield? That's why. All that said, though, I had a really great time with this game. Like, I mainlined a lot of it, but I did do some side quests. And I think it definitely has that Bethesda charm, for better or worse. Like, there are good things, mm-hmm. there are bad things about this game, but I had a great time overall. And I now know what the big, like, aha twist is that everyone raved about when initial reviews dropped. I mean, I think, you know this, everyone who's read a review knows that many people are like, when you reach endgame, like, oh my God, that changes things. And mm-hmm. seeing it now, like, maybe some people will see that twist and like roll their eyes and carry on with their life. But looking at that twist now, I'm like, huh, that's not at all what I expected. And I almost feel like, cool, I've had my first playthrough. I have to come back to this game in future. Mm-hmm. And I'll leave it there purely because I don't want to get into spoilers, because then I think it is a neat twist worth figuring out for people who are still playing the game. But yeah, so I'm getting long in the tooth here, but overall I think Starfield's a great game, but it is a flawed game. There are things with this mm-hmm. game that really frustrate me. So just right out the gates, we've spoken about it before. And again, like, if you know me as a gamer, I think as far as being a critic goes, like, I'm actually very seldom critical. Like, I'll nitpick in games, but I don't come down hard on them. The last thing I'll typically criticize is something that is immersion breaking, because like, that's just the kind of game I am. But the load screens in Starfield are real frustrating. Like, I've told the stories to so many different people this week that I've spoken to about the game after I've said I finished it. But like, if you don't know, if you want to fast travel somewhere, you can't just open up your map and go, I'm going to go to that planet. It's like, no, you need to, you can if you've been to that planet. But if you're doing like a quest thing, for example, you need to go to a new star system and a new planet, you have to like get in your ship, which is a load screen, You need to open up the map, get to that star system, which is another load screen. And only when you're there in that star system can you scan the planet and then load screen to land on that planet. And because I was going through the game pretty quickly, that was like very, like I was very aware of how broken up mm-hmm. the gameplay is with load screens. And it's just like, it's weird that that's a thing in 2023. I never thought about it, but chatting to one of my colleagues, he mentioned maybe it's because they were catering for the Series S. And I never thought about that. Like maybe that is a concession. Maybe, like, I don't know. I have no actual proof, but maybe it was a thing of it's a combination of that and the fact that maybe Bethesda's engine is just very old at this stage.
I don't think that's a console limitation. I think that's more an engine.
You think it's limitation. An engine limitation?
The engine was built in a specific way to stream assets in a specific way and can only do that. Like, I don't think the performance gulf between the two consoles determines whether you can only, like, fast travel between points or like do a No Man's Sky and like land on a planet. That's a design decision that happens like way early in the game.
But that's just one of my criticisms. And then obviously there's the Bethesda bugs. But at this stage, if you've played, I don't know, any Elder Scrolls or Fallout, you're almost going knowing that that's part of the charm of the game. Like one of my favorites was I walked into, and this is again goes to the load screen. I walked into a store, I load screened into a single store to buy something, turned around, and my companion at the time was standing perpendicular to the floor with their feet stuck to the door, and it was hilarious, just floating.
Just like that. Just like, oh my God.
You know,
it's amazing.
Where if it was any other game, I'd be like, this is unacceptable. But I was like, it's a Bethesda game. This is hilarious.
Also, the idea that you have to load into a single room I've played Fallout. That's how Fallout works. It's like every fucking room you go is like, cool. No, this is a load screen.
Let me just bring it back. For those of you who don't know, Starfield is Bethesda's latest game, made by the people who have made Fallout and Elder Scrolls and those RPG games for decades now. I think this was a very ambitious game because for the first time, it wasn't a medieval setting or, you know, the real life Fallout, a nuclear Fallout setting. It was like, no, we're going to let you space travel between solar systems. I mean, and this game's been cooking for many years, so very ambitious.
Yo, long time, yeah.
Very high expectations as well. I don't know if they've been met. But yeah, the basic premise is you are a random person who stumbles upon an artifact, which, I don't know, gives you not necessarily a vision, but something happens when you touch it, and it kicks off this whole story of you joining the game's core...
Constellation.
Yeah, game's core faction called Constellation, who's, like, their whole objective is, like, exploration, and they want to find more of these artifacts. So that's, like, the main thread of the game, is you helping them find these artifacts. What you choose to do between getting those artifacts is completely up to you. And this is where I really do take my hats off to Bethesda, because you're never going to play one of the games and not have anything to do. Like, and I think Starfield, for better or worse, they spared no expense when it comes to side quests and factions and just the good immersive stuff that you'd want from an RPG. Some of my favorite moments, like, again, I mainline the game, I've done a handful of side quests, but I think some of my favorite moments are those side quests that I chose to engage with. Like, for example, I jumped into a new solar system, and then the moment I arrived, I got a distress call from, like, the planet surface. I was like, oh, like, I can afford a detour. And then ended up going to this planet, doing like a whole side quest. I was like, that is really cool. Like, completely, it felt organic. It was just me going off the beaten path. And the few that I did, I was like, I really need to come back to this game. Like, New Game Plus aside, there's a lot of interesting side stories within this huge universe that they've put together. And it's amazing that there's that level of, you can talk to so many people in this game and chances are they're going to give you a side quest. Like, I was joking, I was chatting to some friends yesterday saying, when you open the map, I think typically you would open a map and there's a whole lot of exclamation marks like, oh my God, there's so many side quests to go to. Starfield's map isn't that. Like, you don't know who's, unless I'm navigating it wrong, but you don't know who's got a side quest for you, whatever. You just talk to people and you end up unlocking these stories. But to the level of, like, I spoke to a random janitor in New Atlantis. I was like, oh, it's like a whole side quest here. I spoke
counterpoint, it's because the map is very, very bad.
The map is very bad. No, you're 100% right. I hate that map. But it only
dawned, surface map is terrible.
It's garbage. Terrible. But it dawned on me yesterday that there's no exclamation marks or anything on it. And I was like, huh, that's interesting, because at no point did I struggle to find a side quest or anything. It's like everyone I spoke to had something for me to do. And I think just the level of detail that Bethesda put into that side, like I'd really do take my hats off to them. And then again, not with any spoilers, but post game stuff, I'm like, I don't know how they manage all of this content, how they keep it cohesive. Like, I'm sure speedrunners are going to have a field day breaking this game, but like, how do they keep the average gamer from not exploiting X or Y or Z? I don't know. Like, I'm sure that there are gaps, but this, the fact that they have made this massive game with, like, again, if you don't know, you can explore like literally more than, I think it's about 1,000 planets, give or take. That's what it says in the box. And I mean, that you think, oh my God, 1,000 planets, I can go walk on 1,000 different surfaces. You can. It doesn't mean that there's literally a whole planet to explore. But the fact that they've put that much effort and detail into, you know, making it feel like you're a person in space, you can literally go anywhere. Like, it's very ambitious. Like, whether they've pulled it off or not, I think overall I've enjoyed the game, but there are definitely hiccups that I did not like.
I've kind of not continued playing. I just came to the conclusion that I was not having a ton of fun with it. And like you pointed out earlier, there's like so much stuff coming and so much stuff still on the backlog that I can't justify like spending hours and hours on something that's not engaging me. I think a lot of that had to do with the exploration. It's just like you said, the fast traveling between areas and the whole disjointed nature. It felt like I was fast traveling 90% of the time. That was the gameplay. Fast travel, fast travel, fast travel, fight.
Yeah.
Mission complete, fast travel all the way back.
To like talk to that, a person.
You know
what would have fixed that? Yeah. I thought about it. This game is set in the future. We've got space travel, but at no point do you have like radio transmissions, for example.
Which, it's the same nonsense that's been in RPGs for so long now.
But
it
dawned on me the other day. I'm like, in terms of setting, like, why can't I just get on the radio with whoever gave me the quest and be like, hey, like, I collected the 5 space rocks you wanted, whatever it is.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It just, it's weird.
It's really, really weird. And yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if it was a matter of like expectations not being met or just, again, I've liked Bethesda RPGs, you know, with their faults. I love Fallout. But I think even with Starfield, and it's like interesting setting, it like looks really good. I think they've got a really good sort of take on like realistic quote unquote space exploration. I just think it's still a very sterile and boring world to kind of explore. And I think a lot of those barren planets, like, I know they are meant to be barren because, like, you know, how much shit can be on the moon, for example. But like, at the same time, there are still people there that give you these side quests, and the side quests amount to walk in that direction for fucking 5 minutes or 10 minutes because you don't have a car, you don't have anything. Get there, speak to someone, walk back. And it's just like, what? Like,
it is.
I'd rather just not do any of this.
Yeah, even on that, like, I did think, again, the game has limitations, but like, at no point, unless I'm in space, can I be in my ship flying along a planet's surface. You just can't do that.
You can't do anything. The only thing you can do in your ship is dogfights.
Yeah.
Which seems like a very reductive like experience compared to the one that I'm not saying that they lied about what they were going to have. It's just when they presented it in a way of like, you know, your spaceship is an extension of yourself and is like such this big thing, when in actuality all it is you're either hovering above a planet or you're shooting at the ships. That is the literal, and your ship is like a big inventory hub. That's it. So, yeah, I don't know. It's weird, and I'm straight up like disappointed by it. So, I don't know if I'll come back to it.
It is weird though, because like, I don't know. It's a thing of like, I had a good experience. I think in terms of the story, like, I thought it was actually very engaging. The reason like why Earth is the way it is, and how that, you know, humanity discovered space travel and like, it's very interesting. Like as I got closer to rolling credits, the more of that stuff was revealed, and I was like, oh man, like I'm very, very keen to find out like what happened here. And it is very interesting. Like I thought, someone who's not like, I like Star Wars, but I'm not, you know, a big sci-fi nerd in that, space travel and science and like, but this was very, to me, engaging. But in the same breath, like, it's story aside, I think when it comes to this whole huge ambitious thing of like, wow, 1,000 planets, it's weird to me that I almost feel that they should have focused on like 2 or 3 solar systems, because even that, you've got 2-3 big playgrounds you could have like made the story play out in, you know, across different planets or whatever. But now you've gone and made like, oh yeah, there's like 1,000 planets, you can land on all of them, and then you have to struggle to, you know, do something on everyone, even if it is just one side quest or whatever. But then you see like, I see the hiccups where there's a planet which, not a spoiler, but like it kind of looks like Cyberpunk. Like it's meant to be this neon.
I've seen the city,
And just walking to that city and then thinking back to Cyberpunk I played 2 years ago, and like, I know they're two completely different games, and Cyberpunk is just one aesthetic, you know what I mean? But putting them side by side, it's like, oof, like this does not look good. Like it looks like a game from 10 years ago. It doesn't feel.
I mean, there's that video going around that is kind of like detailing your point very, you know, very astutely. Like, you put Starfield and Cyberpunk side by side, just in terms of, not even just visually, but like in terms of just how you explore that open world and everything. And it's just like, Cyberpunk looks like a game from this year.
Yes.
And Starfield looks like a game from a couple of years ago, which is bizarre because Cyberpunk is actually 3 years old.
Yeah.
Like, the expansion didn't change the fundamental makeup of that world. Like,
I'm saying though. It's just weird when you like, Starfield's fun, I enjoy the game, but when you put it side by side with the Cyberpunk, it's like, oof.
No, it's especially night and day difference.
Especially with that particular planet, where it's like, this is meant to be like a cyberpunk-esque setting, and then you look at it, you're like, oh, it just doesn't look as good. Like,
and this is a great argument for quality over quantity, because yes, Starfield's world is dramatically larger than Cyberpunk's, no doubt.
Yeah.
But Cyberpunk's world is richer and more interesting to explore. And this is coming from someone who doesn't particularly like Cyberpunk. Like, I still haven't finished that game because it hasn't like captured my interest, but I 100% prefer exploring that world than I do Starfield's, because Starfield's doesn't even feel like exploration. It just feels like hopping between little small hubs that aren't that interesting.
Look, I think if you want to play the game like that, like, you will get gamers who will go planet by planet, tick it off and whatever. And like, the game, I think, is flexible enough that you can do that. I mean, it's Bethesda. You don't have to do the main quest. You can just You can just join the space pirates and go farm every planet if you want to.
And anecdotally, I've heard that a lot of those faction quests are some of the best in the game. But again, I ask, like, why reserve some of your best stuff for
the
stuff
side content
on the side when and your main stuff is like really boring? So
I don't know. Like, talking about it, like, I feel like it's a mixed bag. But like, my big take was that I did enjoy the game. I think the story is worth playing. And the new game plus is interesting. Like, I don't know any other game that has done something like this before. I could be wrong. Like, I haven't played every damn game on the planet. But it is.
Why
like,
not, Matthew? Jesus.
I mean, I've tried. But it is incentive to replay the game. Yeah, and Starfield is a first-party Xbox title. It is on Game Pass. So it's like a no-brainer. If you want to try it out, like grab a month of Game Pass. It's dirt cheap.
That's the beauty of Game Pass is you can just give this a go and a few hours in be like, nah, this is not for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And it seems that sales figures for Starfield are kind of crazy. So it's not like it's Bethesda well, has got like a, whether this has the you know, the tooth or the long tooth of like a Skyrim, I highly doubt that.
10 years from now, we'll see. Like Starfield coming to the Switch 2, like, oh,
yeah,
coming to your printer.
I just don't think it's grabbed people in the same way. But then again, neither did Fallout 4. So,
yeah. Look, it is a good game, but it feels very dated for 2023. I think that's all I'll leave
which is kind of a bummer considering how long they took on it. Mm. Yeah. To come out with this, like, this is our big new showcase of our, you know, new updated engine, and it already feels old, doesn't bode well for the future of their games. No. Yeah.
No. Good job. We'll see. That is Starfield.
We shall see.
Do you want to talk to me about the game you couldn't talk about last week, which you now can?
Mm. Mm. So this is this is a indie game called El Paso Elsewhere. It is it's made by I've blanked on it. I think it's like Scaffold Games or something like that. But it's directed by a guy called Xavier Nelson Jr. He's quite active on Twitter. He's directed quite a few. Strange Scaffold. That's the publisher. Nice. He's directed a bunch of other like weird games. Like there was one where he made like a simulator game where you sell and trade like alien organs on the black market, which was kind of interesting.
Oh, that's cool.
he made a game about an airport run by dogs, which was also pretty cool.
Nice.
El Paso Elsewhere, I would say, is probably the most ambitious game him and his team have made. And I think it's really cool because it takes a lot of like influences from games like Max Payne and Stranglehold, in that it is a third-person shooter with a lot of slow-motion shenanigans, lots of diving through the air. It's very noir-focused, very like somber and whatever. Like your character, what is his name? Something Savage, James Savage.
Max.
he pops pills to regain health. It's a Max Payne thing, but like the story is very otherworldly and Lovecraftian. It's
nice.
You're killing a lot of vampires. You are stuck in this like sort of other world that you've accessed through a motel in El Paso. And the gist of the story is that you're trying to hunt down your ex-girlfriend, who also happens to be Dracula. In this world, what? Dracula is a woman. Her name's Dracula. And she's like enacted this ritual that is going to like see the end of the world, and you as a monster hunter are like trying to stop her, but also trying to understand why she's doing this. And I think the story and the performances that really like won me over the gameplay. Like the gameplay's fun, but it's also it's simple and one note for the length of the game. It's like an 8-hour game, and the sort of shooting you're doing in the first hour is the same that you're doing in the last. You just get different weapons.
Okay.
Different weapons and enemies that kind of like shake things up slightly. And the enemies do kind of like force you to think about how to use the whole like breadth of your arsenal. But, you know, at a point I realized that, just hitting slow motion was a bit more effective than diving through the air and like putting myself in a bad position, stuff like that. But the story itself is really, really cool. Like at first you start to kind of peel back who Savage is and like his problems with addiction and his like push and pull between wanting to be a violent person and trying to stay away from this life. You then start delving into the like vampire mythology of this world, where a lot of it stems from like ancient Egypt, which is kind of cool, and how it's intertwined with like several different types of monsters over time, like werewolves and witches, and how they all exist in this otherworldly place. And then probably the best is just the exposition of Savage and Dracula's like relationship, how they met with him being unaware that she was a vampire, him accepting when she told him that he was a that she was a vampire, and like him kind of piecing together like, oh, okay, so what does this mean for like history? Were you here? Did you do this? You know, and at the same time, her asking weird things about typical human nature. Like, there's this really cool conversation that you can pick up in like an audio log where they're watching a Transformers movie, and she has this very innocent question of like, where do the new Transformers come from? How do they make Transformer babies? And he's just like, what are you talking about? What is happening right now? It's like this really cool and genuine relationship that you see blossom and eventually like crumble when she gives in to wanting, you know, the sort of power that I guess she feels she deserves or used to have hundreds of thousands of years ago. The voice acting is really, really good. Zalavia actually voices Savage, and voice of Dracula is I forget her name now. She's the content creator. She streams a lot, but she was well known for only finding that Zelda tutorial like at the end of the game.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if you see her handle, you'll recognize her. But she's like stemming into voice acting, and she's really, really good here.
Amazing.
Like really good. The two of them just have like really good chemistry, and every time they were on screen or had a conversation, it was gripping. Really, really good. So yeah, it's a good game. I do think that the gameplay could have evolved slightly over time, but that said, I never got completely bored with it. I still had a really good time pulling off headshots. It feels really good. There's a good like feedback loop to like going in slow motion, hitting headshots. Is a good sound and like indicator that you've killed an enemy. The guns feel really good as well. And I think there's a lot of set pieces where some levels, because this is kind of like level based, some of the levels feel like music videos almost in a sense. They're like a lot of things are moving around you and doors are opening. It feels very. I saw someone on Twitter actually after I posted my review describe this as the ashtray maze, but all the time, and they are 100% correct.
That's cool.
Like, it is like that. Everything is like warping around you, and it's weird, and you can't trust like the makeup of the level because it shifts and changes around you. Like, it's very good.
It looks like good fun.
Highly recommend. It's 8 hours. It's like, I think, $20 on Steam. It's on Xbox Game Pass as well.
Is it on Game Pass?
I'm mistaken. I think it might be, or it's just on Xbox. I'm not sure.
I don't know if it is on actually Game Pass.
It's super good though. I had a great time with it. It starts off a bit slow, so the first few levels, like, you're like, okay, I get this, like, but maybe about a third in, you're like, the story starts really kicking in, and then I was like hooked. I couldn't put it down after that.
Yeah. I was actually gonna say, like, so I hear you, like the first hour gameplay is kind of the same as like the final hour of gameplay. But I think back to Max Payne, and I think, but I guess it is the same with that. Like, the gameplay doesn't really change, and all that but part of the reason you're so hooked is because you're like, where's the story going? Like, what is Max going to do next or whatever? And I mean, that's true of a lot of games. Like, the gameplay doesn't necessarily have to change. It's about keeping you engaged the whole time. This I love Max Payne. Like, I've played Max Payne 1 and 2 way too many times back in the day. I'd probably love this. It does look a lot like Max Payne, and that's not a bad thing. They're clearly leaning into that. Like, when you said you pick up painkillers, I'm like, oh my god, that's such a Max Payne thing. Like, of course.
It's like, okay, so the gameplay does somewhat change because of the enemies. I think what I'm trying to say is like the shooting doesn't really change. Like, the primary goal of every level is get in, kill things, get out. Yeah. So like, that objective doesn't very like change. But the enemies, like, there's one instance where you are, so the world around you is kind of like warping according to memories. So there's that one point where it's pulling memories of Dracula's like old castle, and in there are knights in armor that are suddenly reanimated and are enemies, and they've only got a weak spot on their back. I figured out that they're also susceptible to my melee attack, which is like your melee attack is limited, so you have to pick up stakes to do a melee attack. And they will like instantly die with that. So like that changed how I approach things, because now I had to always look out for stakes because my guns were pretty much useless against these guys. Then they're witches that have projectile attacks, and they are usually perched up in like weird places. So you have to use, say, a rifle or pistols to take them out accurately as opposed to a shotgun.
Yeah.
So it does vary.
I get exactly what you mean. And to me, it's more thing of like, at no point are you getting a double jump. In terms of that kind of gameplay, it's not changing.
Not at all. And the objectives aren't changing. So it can feel like there were times where I was like, I'd start a new level and be like, okay, cool. I know, you know, it's like, I have to do this again.
Yeah. Oh boy, here we go like, again.
But like then there are like levels which completely turn like expectations on their head in the way that they unfold. So, and that is especially true in like the second half of the game. It gets like absolutely crazy. Good game.
It looks
good
ending like a
as
good
well.
Time.
Really oh, enjoyed nice. It.
Yeah. Nice. El Paso. Elsewhere. I like the name though. It makes sense now that you tell me the motel is called El Paso.
It's a very cool name. Mm. Yeah. Very, very cool.
Nice. Cool. I know we're running along in time here, but let us talk about another game that I finished. You are quite far, but not quite. You haven't quite hit credits yet, but we did talk about it briefly last week. Mortal Kombat 1. I've since rolled credits in this game, and let me tell you, it does not disappoint in the bullshit department. It is... it is as silly as you think it will be. And I mean, we knew this when we spoke about it last week. We had both played a couple chapters, and it's already very clear that, you know, it's Mortal Kombat. It's cheesy as hell, and they lean into that, and that's not a bad thing. but I guess it is just worth recapping. If you did miss our initial discussion, Mortal Kombat 1 is a franchise reboot again.
Of course, it has to be. Like, why not?
If we're recapping here quickly, like there was a soft reboot with Mortal Kombat. It was just called Mortal Kombat, but it's technically Mortal Kombat 9 in 2011. And that recapped the events of the first, second, and third game with some twists. And then Mortal Kombat 10 and 11 basically picked up that story and carried it forward. But at the end of 11... Liu Kang basically
and made it ridiculously convoluted as well.
Super convoluted. But at the end of 11, Liu Kang basically became, I don't know what the right term is, but like, well, lack of a better description.
Fire God.
He became like the master of time. Like he rebuilt all the dimensions and that's where Mortal Kombat 1 kicks off. It's this like a fresh start. But of course, in this fresh start, there are a lot of familiar faces I think the exciting thing going into this game is seeing like, okay, how will NetherRealm like subvert our expectations? Like, we're expecting this kind of story. What are they going to change? And I don't know. The story still boils down to shit's going down. There's all the familiar faces you'd expect, maybe with slightly different roles. Like, I think the most obvious one is, as you mentioned, Liu Kang's a fire god. Where does it leave Raiden? Oh, Raiden's now just an innocent monk who gets lightning powers. Like, oh no. who would have foreseen this?
Yeah.
You still get Johnny Cage and Kung Lao and all these familiar faces you'd expect. And I think going to the story, I was excited to see like, oh, well, cool. Like it's a fresh start. Let's see where they take this. And without getting to spoilers, there's just some eye rolling moments, which is to be expected, no doubt. But I'm a bit disappointed that the story, like I say disappointed, like I was grinning the whole time because it's cheesy, but it's a sort of thing I appreciate because I'm like, man, I can't believe you've done this. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, like you could have done something different. Like, I can't believe you've done this. I wish it was a bit different how they tackle things. But still, if you want to play the story mode, it's always a good time. Like, I love the whole thing of watching a dumb cinematic playing, watching more dumb cinematics playing. It is a bit short. Like, I don't know how it compares to...
It is quite,
think,
yeah.
Why do I think that previous games have been in the 8 to 10 hour region? I don't know if that's me not remembering correctly.
I don't know. When I hit the halfway mark, because you get a trophy pop that says you're halfway, I was like, oh, really? Like, I feel like I've barely played this.
So. I think this story is 6 hours long, which, again, that's a fighting game. I don't think you're explicitly picking it up for the story, but just to put a disclaimer, don't rush out and buy this only for the story, because it is very short.
Yeah,
Like, you will be, I think, severely disappointed when you just roll through it in one evening. You're like, oh.
I think I mentioned this to you. I don't know if it was on the podcast, but it feels easy. Like, there are different difficulty modes now, but the standard one is really easy.
I think, especially when you get over the learning curve, it's very easy to pick up and play. But I think after the first few chapters, by the end of the game, I was just absolutely blitzing through enemies. But I suppose we can touch on that. I do really like the new cameo system. So again, if you don't know, Mortal Kombat 1 has a new mechanic where you basically have a second fighter with you off screen at all times, and you can call them in to help you with a button press. Literally, you can push R1 and they'll come in and do an attack, or you can push forward and R1, it'll do a different attack. And that's tied to a meter that constantly refreshes throughout the fight. And I think, like I've mentioned before, I think that's a very clever inclusion. Because Mortal Kombat's I think it's a very easy game to just pick up and play. Even if you're a beginner, you can button mash and you'll do stuff.
The dialer combo approach is way more mentally easier to grasp than a Street Fighter.
You're gonna push down, forward, punch. It'll probably do something or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think the cameo system just helps bridge the gap even better for beginners, because now you can literally do a move with just one button press. And at the same time, if you're a veteran player, you can use those cameo attacks to extend your combos or do other cool things. So I think it's just a clever inclusion. I like it, is what I'm getting at. And I do wonder, when you do get to Mortal Kombat 2 or 13, whatever the hell they call it, do they ditch the cameo system and go back to something more classic? Or do they go, actually, this really worked, let's keep it in for future games?
I know this is probably controversial, but it's counter to what I've seen a lot of people saying, but I much prefer this cameo system to the customizable build system of 11. It's every character is three variations. I'm like, I know.
Yeah, we know that. I know Darren and Jeff and Curve and friends of ours have said no, they miss that system. I wasn't big enough into Mortal Kombat 11 to tell you that I desperately miss it. I really dig the cameo system, and for better or worse,
I felt what that system did wasn't give each character three definite builds. It actually took one character and stripped them into three. I always felt like I had fewer moves as each character, as opposed to a full move set that I feel that I have here. I mean, I might be wrong again. I'm just like you. I'm coming at this from a very surface level approach. I don't play this stuff competitively, but I can tell from a perspective of what I think a lot of people will be who play Mortal Kombat. Because Mortal Kombat 11 sold 15 million copies. You're going to tell me that 15 million people are big FGC or fighting game, professionals? Probably not. A lot of people are there for the story, and I think that's why the story is very important. So if you can make the game feel better and approachable for the majority of casual fighters, I think that's quite important.
Yeah.
But obviously the legs of a fighting game are built on competitive play. So we'll see how this goes down with that community.
It is interesting though, because I think Mortal Kombat's biggest flaw at this stage is that it launched in the same year as Street Fighter 6, which is I'm not a huge fighting game fan. I love fighting games, but I'm not hardcore big into them. I'll play them very casually. And Street Fighter's a franchise I've dabbled with on and off over my entire lifetime. But I can't tell you, I'm a big Street Fighter fan, Jeff, for example. We know Jeff loves Street Fighter. But I can tell you that Street Fighter 6 has definitely left a bigger impression on me this year. The game just feels like better is subjective, I guess. Like, I don't know what sort of fighting game you prefer, but I think as an overall package, Street Fighter VI just feels better to me. The Street Fighter VI's story mode is equally, if not more, dumb. Like, it's got a whole RPG system, whatever, but I love playing through it. Street Fighter VI has me wanting to go back and do random fights, whereas Mortal Kombat, I feel like I finished it. Might hop on to play with you and other friends if that ever happens. But if I had to choose one or the other, like, I'm sorry, Street Fighter VI is the one that I would probably choose. It just feels like a better package overall. Like, and again, maybe that's subjective. I don't know. Like, I'm sure you'll have Mortal Kombat fans going like, no, Mortal Kombat 1 is better for X, Y, Z reason. And again, that's not to say that Mortal Kombat's a bad fighting game. I just think it doesn't feel as refined or as complete as a Street Fighter. And it's not its fault. It just happened to launch in the same year. Like, if Mortal Kombat came out as the only fighting game in a year or whatever, like, I think it would have just left a better impression. But playing it 3 months after Street Fighter VI, I'm like, it's just not as good.
It's the Legend of Zelda Horizon problem again.
100%.
Two games that are completely good in their own rights, because they come out so close, you're going to compare them side by side.
You go like, nope, Street Fighter's the better game.
Yeah.
But that's it. Mortal Kombat 1, it is a fun game. Like, I can recommend if you want to play the story mode, like, don't get me wrong, it's really good, but it is short. Mm. So just keep that in mind if you are going to...
I will say for the story mode, I mean, I'm not done with it yet, but the thing that I've really liked about it is just how they've recontextualized some characters. Mm. Like, I think where they're putting all these characters and where they're heading, and it being like a very similar scenario to previous games, given that they had a blank slate, is kind of disappointing.
Yes.
It seems even disappointing to Liu Kang, who thought it would go differently. But in amongst that, the character changes are like really good. Like, I really, really like Johnny Cage, even though he's kind of a similar character. He's just got way more depth to him, and I really dig him. I love what they did with Baraka and how they contextualize like why he looks different and how it's a disease and this and that. And then just Sub-Zero and Scorpion being brothers gives them way more depth as well as characters.
Yeah.
It's cool. But they also do some typical bullshit like, oh, Quan Chi doesn't have white skin, and then, oh, now he has white skin. This is how he got that. Or like, Kenshi's not blind when you first see him, and oh, it turns out he will get blind eventually. Come on, man. We don't have to get the characters back to exactly where they were. That's not the point. Like,
but even that, it's like, I know the game's called Mortal Kombat. Don't get me wrong, there has to be this tournament. But they straight up put you in and Liu Kang's like, there's this tournament called Mortal Kombat happening. And it's like, you've just reset the timelines to like, to stop this conflict from happening. Like, surely, I almost would have preferred if it was like him trying to prevent it. And then you see, like, no matter what he does, it still happens. But they just straight up put you in like, he's choosing fighters for Mortal Kombat. I'm like, why?
Essentially.
Surely.
And the whole like idea is he's like, well, we've got this like shaky truce with everyone and everyone respects one another, and this tournament is just a means to keep the peace. And it's like, okay, this is not going to go down well. Surely you can see that. Like,
I'm like, I would have much preferred if they, like, again, just, I don't know. It's almost like, remember the original, this sounds ridiculous, the original Mortal Kombat reboot. Okay, Mortal Kombat 9, technically. Did you play that one?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you remember that was like, future Raiden sends a message to original Raiden.
Message back, yeah.
And then original Raiden's like, oh shit, like this happens. I need to try change this. And no matter what he does, like it still ends up happening. I almost would
ends
have like,
worse, yeah.
I would have almost preferred something like that where Liu Kang's like, no Mortal Kombat in this new timeline. And then no matter what he does, it happens. But it's just the fact that they literally start you off like, there's a tournament. I'm like, why? If I'm Liu Kang, I'm going to go, no tournaments. This isn't going to happen anymore.
And his justification is like, oh, I got rid of like key people who are troublemakers. I'm like, okay, cool. So you got rid of Quan Chi, got rid of Shang Tsung. Firstly, they end up exactly where you were trying to prevent them from getting. So that, like, good job. Yeah. But also, like, if you're going to remove those people, why did you leave Shao Kahn? Like, that is the biggest glaring omission, because from the moment you see him, you can tell he is not vibing with, like, this whole shaky truce thing. Like, he is literally threatening it from the get-go. And it's
all intents and purposes, his first line of dialogue is like, fuck Earthrealm. And we're like,
literally. And it's like, okay, so why did you leave this guy here to just chill? Like, I don't understand. It's,
yeah.
Maybe we're asking too many questions. A story that is good. I'm still preferring the story much more to 11, because I thought 11 was absolute bullshit. The whole time travel chronic and nonsense where they got like, it was just nonsense. Just absolute bullshit. So I much preferred this one.
Yeah.
And I'm still planning to finish it. Like I was saying earlier, Mortal Kombat to me is the reason a lot more casual people are playing fighting games, because with that reboot in 2011, they figured out a way to market it to normal people. Is not what I meant to say, but to market it to casual fighting people. I never played fighting games because I just didn't. But I saw Mortal Kombat 9, and they were like, "Oh, we've got this revolutionary new story mode." And I loved it.
Yeah.
And since then, I bought every Mortal Kombat. You know, I have not done that for any other fighting game, but I've done that for Mortal Kombat, and you can tell in the sales figures that it's working. It's 3 million for 9, 10 million for 10, 15 million for 11. Mortal Kombat 11 is the highest selling fighting game outside of Smash Bros.
Which is crazy.
If you talk to Jeff, that makes it the highest ranking fighting game of all time, because he doesn't think Smash Bros. Is a fighting game. That comes through because more casual people are playing it. Like, Street Fighter 6 is not going to reach that. I can tell you
it's not even going to get close.
Despite being a better game.
Forget Mortal Kombat 1. Play Street Fighter for the damn RPG mode. It was too good.
I really should play that. I really should.
I had a great time with that. But yeah, Mortal Kombat 1, it's a good time. Don't get us wrong.
Call the next one Mortal Kombat 2?
I don't know. We spoke in Discord about how the naming really upsets me, like way more than it should. But yeah, it's a story for another
day. It is very funny. Matthew gets completely triggered by this naming. It's very funny.
I hate it. But yeah, that's Mortal Kombat.
How do you feel about numerals changing? Mortal Kombat X, Mortal Kombat 11.
That's like the Fast and Furious problem.
I hate that. Why are people afraid of putting 10 in numerics?
I've watched a video. I must actually found it on TikTok. It was genius. Where the person is like, Fast and Furious is like the only franchise where literally sequel after sequel, there's just no logic at all.
Oh, yeah. It's complete craziness.
Never has it gone Fast and Furious 1, Fast and Furious 2, and then like whatever. It's like Fast and the Furious. Too Fast, Too Furious. And then it's like Fast and Furious.
Tokyo Drift.
Then it's like Fast and X.
Furious, yeah.
And like, just and call then, it.
my favorite is the 8th one where they chose a pun. The Furious.
I appreciate a good pun, but you need to stop.
And then Fast 9 was just Fast 9. That's
like
it.
F9, yeah.
F9.
I hate it.
More like press F to pay respects. Fucking hell.
I know.
God, maybe they should make that the name of the last one. F to pay respects.
Fuck, I would be there. I know we're running long in the tooth here, but I do want to very, very briefly talk about a surprise mobile game I've been playing. Yo, this is a long episode.
I forgot we had another one.
Well, here we are. Monster Hunter Now, let me tell you, look at me, hey, capturing mobile game footage on my bus ride.
Can you believe
to work.
This poor iPhone is screaming in the background. It's just like, release me, please.
Just for context, I don't know why it's got my time and my battery power in the top right. Sorry, that shouldn't be there. But for those of you who don't know, Monster Hunter has a mobile version now called Monster Hunter Now, made by the very same people who brought you Pokemon Go and Niantic.
Oh, this game looks good. Holy shit.
Let me tell you, Monster Hunter Now, it's, you know, the mobile version, and it is surprisingly very good.
Oh, like, look at this combat. What is this? This is nuts.
So I installed Monster Hunter Now thinking like, I'm just going to have a look at it. It'll probably be like a quick little distraction, but boy, does it make me just want a new Monster Hunter, because it's got all of the good stuff you'd expect from a Monster Hunter, but in your hand.
Sure.
So for those of you who have not, well, I suppose not for those of you who have not played. If you've played Pokemon Go, you know that I suppose this applies to both. Anyways, Pokemon Go, when you open up the game, it uses real world data and maps to like populate with Pokemon. You know, there'll be gyms and random Pokemon at certain points around the map. Monster Hunter now uses the same premise, in terms of the key locations or landmarks, whatever, but instead replaces them with monsters and collection points. So the premise is you're going to walk around the map, you walk around in real life, stumble upon a monster, tap it. Instead of like Pokemon Go throwing a ball to catch it, you can now fight the monster because, you know, it's Monster Hunter. It's a different game. But they've kept all the good tropes and features of Monster Hunter, and that what is the basic loop of a Monster Hunter? You're a new hunter. Oh no, there's a monster. You fight that monster. You get parts from that monster. You make armor and weapons from it. Oh no, there's a bigger monster. It's that, but now done in a mobile setting where you're hunting monsters around the map and using those to, you know, level up and find and fight bigger monsters. But what's quite cool is that when I first saw this trailer, I was like, I don't know how the gameplay is going to translate. Purely because, for starters, Monster Hunter, a hunt takes anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes, which is not suited for a mobile game. Like, you want things to be very quick, in and out. And I think they've done it so well in that, again, like, I'm only fighting at the stage 2-star monsters. I'm sure I can get to 5 to 8-star, you know, the more I play, and those will maybe be a bit longer. But a battle here is like, if you're fighting a big monster, anywhere from 30 to 60 seconds. So it's super quick. And what's pretty cool is that it's not like, and I'm sorry for the Pokemon Go comparisons, it's just easy to contextualize.
I mean, it's made by the same people.
It's made by the same people. So like in Pokemon Go, you would typically throw the ball and catch the Pokemon, and that's like the basic loop. Yeah, though, I was concerned of like, well, how do you control your hunter? Like, Monster Hunter's got a lot of depth to it. But they've done it very well in that it's tap to attack and then swipe to dodge. And that's it. Your character will always automatically run to the monster, you know, to be within attacking range. But what's quite cool is that a lot of depth from the main franchise has translated over, in the sense that like when you start, you've only got the sword and shield. But just like real Monster Hunter, you're going to unlock a whole lot of different weapons, which kind of act as your character class because they all play and feel different to each other. And what's quite neat is that if you're watching me play, like, I've got poor connectivity there for some reason. but I'm playing with a long sword and I'm seeing the same sort of, I need to use the same sort of logic that I've had in the main game, and that a long sword's like a strong weapon, but it's sort of a middle ground. Like, it's not quick to attack with like a sword and shield, but it's not slow to attack like a hammer. It's this good middle ground. I need to time my attacks and when I'm going to dodge away. But what's quite cool is that it's that same depth of like one of the best parts of a longsword is that you want to counter attack. So you sheath your sword and you need to time when you pull it out. And that's in this game as well. When I hold my character, they sheath their sword and I can counter attack. So it's just cool. What I'm getting is it's quite cool that the depth from Monster Hunter is there. It's coming to mobile, and even so much so that I know I've already reached a point where I can break parts of a monster that I'll use to make different weapons. So there is incentive in like attacking certain, you know, the tail, for example, or whatever. And I'm more just blown away by the fact that they've made it work so well on mobile. All that said, it is a mobile game. So there's a lot of like, it's a free-to-play game. You know, there's going to be barriers.
Just like Pokemon Go.
And like egregious things. Like, I've reached a point now where to progress my main quest, it's like hunt 10 monsters, gather from 10 points. And I do that, and then it gives me like a paragraph of dialogue to progress the main story. Then the next set of quest is like hunt 10 monsters, collect from, and it's like, okay, I get it. Like, it's obviously staggering how the game is drip fed to you.
It's the grind, yeah.
It's the grind. And there are paid elements in that. Like, you get 5 free daily potions.
I was going to ask, like Pokemon Go did the Pokeballs, which is always a commodity. Do you have to purchase like whetstones for your weapons here?
So not that I've seen yet. I've only seen first aid kits, which you get 5 free a day. But I do imagine if you're playing a lot and you are taking a lot of damage, which is bound to happen. It's a monster hunt, so you're not going to dodge every attack. I think particularly as the monsters become harder to fight, I do wonder like how aggressive is it that, oh shit, like 5 potions a day just isn't enough. Like I'm going to have to now pay to get more healing.
Yeah,
items,
I mean, it's definitely balanced to a degree where you'll have to make that purchasing decision. I mean, the Pokeballs was the same. At the beginning, it's like, well, I'm drowning in these things. But then you go to like community days or like there's harder Pokemon and you like burn like 20 trying to catch one or, you know, and suddenly you've got to like purchase 100. So,
yeah.
So they need to make money somehow.
They need to make money. Like, I completely get that. But I mean, I've put in a good few hours into this already. And like my biggest takeaway is that it is the perfect little mobile distraction. Like, I'm playing on the bus to work, and it's got that same thing of, you know, in Pokemon Go, you can't drive because they don't want you to play and drive, so they like restrict gameplay. But the bus stops enough that I can go like, oh, there's a monster to fight. Let me fight that monster, and I'll do it.
It's
and
like you're moving too fast. You're not allowed to play this game.
And like, I'm very keen to just keep chipping away at it, even if it is 5 to 10 minutes a day. I want to see how deep does this game go. And it is all made, like, it'll work very well on mobile because, like, Pokemon Go, they'll go, oh, not a community day necessarily, but they'll go, oh, for a limited time only, this rare monster will appear. You know, you can go fight it and get different armor pieces and. So, like, it's definitely got a long road of content ahead of it. I can see this working. I don't know if it'll be around as long as Pokemon Go, because I mean Pokemon Go has been around forever at this stage, but I can see it having legs to go
and they've tried this with multiple franchises. I mean, there was the I don't think Niantic did it, but there was the Minecraft one.
There was the Harry Potter one well.
Which
that
I think
Niantic.
They shut that down, if I'm
they
not
shut
mistaken.
It down I don't know.
Didn't they do a Ghostbusters one as well?
They did a ghost. I don't know if it was it Niantic as well? I don't know.
I'm not
Look,
sure.
All I'll say is that I think out of all of the... Oh, sorry, recording's over. Out of all the mobile games that I've played, kind of like Pokemon, this one I can see surviving. But it depends. Like, I don't know what the grind is like. Like, I've played a few hours and I'm having a good time. But if I hit a wall where a monster's one hitting me and I just don't have enough healing, then I feel I might fall off. But we'll see. Like, I'm having a good time at the moment. So, yeah.
Okay.
Monster
cool.
Tonight.
It looks cool. Like, I might actually give that a go. That visually looks kind of insane.
It's good fun, honestly. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We are way over time.
We're like 15 minutes
way
over. We're
over
good.
Time. Okay. Fly through game releases. I'm not even going to make jokes about half of them.
Let me just make a little timestamp here. Cool. Game releases.
No jokes. It's just serious game releases. It's serious game releases from
October.
September 30th up until October, I think, 6th.
Sure.
I think. Imagine my calendar would open. Oh, there we go. God. Yeah, 6th. Okay, so we finished with September stuff.
Yep.
Oh my God, why are there so many? Why are there so many? Why?
Read them.
Why do they have to be so many options of games?
There's a game on this list called Bang on Balls. I just want you to know that ahead of time. You'll get there. Dinky Guardians, October 2nd.
Why do they do this? Dinky Guardians, PC, October 2nd. I've never known how to pronounce this name. Disgaea? Disgaea?
I think it's Disgaea.
I think it's this guy here. Disgaea 7, Vows of the Virtueless.
Amazing.
PlayStation, Switch, PC. You can figure out if it's PS4 or PS5. That's the game you have to play with us today.
Yeah.
October 3rd, The Lamplighters League, which is a sort of like strategy XCOM-ish game. I saw there were reviews for it this week. Pretty cool.
Nice.
Xbox, PC, October 3rd.
Nice.
Warhammer 40k Darktide coming to Xbox finally October 4th.
Nice.
Worldless, not wordless. Worldless.
Nice.
PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC October 4th. Big one for the week, Assassin's Creed Mirage, which Matthew is currently playing.
Mm-hmm.
Busy exploring ancient Baghdad.
I've played a whole half
Basim.
An hour.
It's actually good that you're playing this because I never played a lot of Valhalla. You did, and Basim is from Valhalla. So
listen, we'll talk about it next week. I don't know what I can and can't say.
And you haven't played you've never played a classic Assassin's Creed, I don't think. Wow, this is going to be an experience.
One of my friends is like, oh, let me know what Mirage is like. I was like, I'm actually the wrong person. Because, sorry, he's like...
You are the wrong person.
No, because he's like, I love the original Assassin's Creed. I'm like, I'm the wrong person to ask.
Oh, you are the super wrong person to ask, yeah. Because this game is like Assassin's Creed 1, Assassin's Creed 2, and Unity all in one. So,
yeah.
Anyway, you might enjoy it. I think you're going to enjoy it, actually.
Yeah.
Oh God, Bang on Balls, Chronicles. Chronicles. Why is Chronicles appended to
more than
to
one
that?
Story. Like, it's more than one story. PC, of Bang on
PC, PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch, October 5th. Front Mission 2 Remake, coming to Switch, October 5th. Little Learning Machines.
This is sweet.
Is that what you call children? PC, October 5th. No, My Little Universe sounds like Starfield.
That's what parents call their children. My Little Universe. See, there we go. We can keep this going.
That's what Pete Hines calls Starfield. Switch, PC, October 5th. The Sisters 2, Road to Fame. What is this?
That's a sequel.
PlayStation, Xbox, Switch. Oh, God. Switch and PC, October 5th. Oh, I didn't realize this was this week. Detective Pikachu Returns, coming to Switch, October 6th. And then the last one,
That one got you real good.
Dyslexia got me real good there. Sword Art Online, Lost Recollection. Jesus, Sword Art.
That's it for the week.
I don't even know what Sword Art as a franchise is anymore because I just feel like they come and go as they please. If I'm not mistaken, the early access for Forza Motorsports is this Friday as well. You know, the whole like pay $100, get it Friday, and then the real release date is the next like Tuesday.
I hate that developers have figured out that works, because if Starfield's numbers are
Starfield, people paid $100 like crazy to play that early. Like,
there were millions of people playing that early access period. It's crazy. Yeah.
Cool. News.
My God, where does one even begin with this week of news? Because there is some...
PlayStation doesn't have a CEO. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Jim Ryan is retiring from Sony in March. I don't
know. too late.
Some might say too late. Oh, no. Register to...
Yeah, I was about to say you chose a publication that we could read.
I guess we can just read the headline.
Yes, so PlayStation CEO Jim Ryan is retiring. He will retire after being with Sony for 28 years. He started with Sony Europe in 1994, and he became CEO of Sony Interactive in 2019 after Sean Layden left, if I'm not mistaken. So he'll be retiring in March 2024. Sony Group Corporation President and Chief Operating Officer Hiroki Totoki will take on the role as interim CEO until they can appoint a new permanent CEO.
No.
So it says here in 2019, Ryan placed John Kodera as president and CEO of CEO.
Oh, I thought it was Sean Layden.
Fucking clue who John Kodera even is.
Maybe it's a temporary... person.
Maybe he was temp after Sean Layden,
Am I wrong in saying that Jim Ryan isn't exactly a beloved
No, he's not.
I don't know if he's had a good
He exudes a lot of very good rich man energy, and there were reports. I mean, there was an instance last year where he had like a internal email that went out which basically just told his employees, you know, in a weird way that they must enjoy their holiday homes in fucking Europe or whatever. And it's like, my dude, not all of us own holiday homes. You know, So he had that sort of like energy to him. Nice. He's also, you know, a lot of people attribute the sort of push towards games as a service
to
Jim Ryan, which is true. He spearheaded that. And I've seen some weird shit where people are like, oh, now that he's gone, we can get back to the single player stuff. It's like, nah, that shit's in the pipeline. Like, that is happening.
Games as a service equals zero. Good job.
It doesn't work like that. Like, I think Jason Schreier actually mentioned as part of his reporting here that a lot of studios, first party studios, have struggled with the shift over to games as a service games. And I think we're going to see that play out fairly soon. I'm not entirely confident that all of that is going to hit, and it's going to take years for that to like course correct.
Yeah, and I don't know what that means for Sony.
It'll be a generation. Yeah, it'll be a whole generation until that fixes itself. So, goodbye, Jim Ryan.
Good.
Enjoy your holiday home.
I think just on that games as a service thing, I want to jump to the story quickly on Sega canceling Creative Assembly's Hyenas. Which games as a service game that didn't even make it out the gate yet. I think
I saw
a tweet from, was it Andy Cortez? It was someone who basically listed a whole lot of games as a service that have released and died. And it's just like, there's just too many. Like,
so many.
You can't, I think every company, like, you're right, Sony can't course correct, and they won't for a long time. They're going to launch a whole lot of games as a service, and I think any person can tell them, like, hey, I don't think that's going to work out for you. Like, I could be wrong. Mm. Maybe they've got another Fortnite in their hands, for example, like a game that's like sets the world on fire. We don't know. But if history's told us anything, like, there's too many games as a service and people just don't have the time to play all of them. Like, I'd love to play Fortnite and Counter-Strike and like all of these games, but I just can't give my time to all of them. Like, it's impossible. Now you're going to launch, I mean, they've got tons planned for the PlayStation. Anyways.
The first one soon is the Last of Us. The Last of Us one that should be coming out relatively soon. And then Jade Raymond Studios making that one. What's it called? Fair Plays or something? Yeah. I don't know. It looks.
So anyways, what I'm getting at is like, Sega's canceled this game, and I don't see this trend stopping. Like, it's just, they're too...
Bungie's making one, I just remembered. I'm just like trying to think of all the first party studios we know are making games as a service things. If I'm not mistaken, Housemarque is working on one as well. Firesprite is working on one. Like, again, this is just Sony first party 5.
Yeah, it's too
games
many.
Games as a service. Like, that's insane. That's just insane.
So back to this piece. Sega announced it had cancelled the Hyenas in a financial update. It blamed the decision on lower profitability of the European region. It's almost like people don't have enough time and money to put into... I don't know, but...
There was some hubbub about the development of this... it was actually came from Sega basically publicly saying that the development had been challenging on this project. Mm. So a few weeks later, them like outright canceling it instead of even going free to play is a bit telling.
Yeah. But I guess so that's happening. And just on the same theme, Epic Games, the people who own Fortnite, cutting 16% of staff. So even the Epic, who is like in my head printing money from a game like Fortnite, which is the absolute pinnacle, having issues. Like, I'm not saying it's because of XYZ, but it's just interesting that like even them, like they're cutting staff down. And I think when this article broke, did I link the wrong? I had a piece that I could read. I swear I could have read this. I read this earlier.
This one makes me more angry than anything else because of Tim Sweeney.
He's come out and
they published
stuff,
like a memo, and that memo, put it this way, like everything that's happening at Epic now, these layoffs are a result of his decisions.
Yes,
and instead of him taking, say, a gigantic pay cut, he is cutting jobs. So they basically said in the memo that they are rapidly outspending as opposed to what they're bringing in. So firstly, they are just like obviously going down the wrong avenues in terms of business. I'm almost certain it wasn't spelled out there, but the fucking legal fees that they keep paying to fight Apple in increasingly stupid ways are definitely to blame for that sort of imbalance, because they've just now petitioned the Supreme Court in the US to kind of overrule. Like, that sort of shit is hundreds of thousands of dollars.
If not more.
That's just being pissed away for the dumbest, like, anyway. The memo also noted that the Fortnite creator program, where, if I'm not mistaken, like, creators get a cut of things that they create in Fortnite. So now that's like defined as a lower margin business, and they are kind of seeing like less money come from Fortnite as a result, because now they have to pay out these creators. So these are all things like in the memo that seem to be expected, and then they go, oh, but still we have to fire like 900 people because we're spending too much. Like, that's a CEO problem. Like, that is a C-suite problem that they should be putting their hands up and being like, we fucked up. We're going to, you know, sort of like Satoru Iwata, who like cuts his paycheck in like half when that happened to Nintendo.
Yeah. It's, so, I don't know. It's weird because, look, I know there's big picture stuff, but I just think, and again, like, I know Epic is bigger than Fortnite, but it just, in my head, I think Fortnite has like tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, people playing. And I know not everyone spends money, but that game makes a lot of money. Like, it really
does. It makes a fortune.
So much money. And I'm like, that game alone, maybe it can't carry the whole company, but surely, surely you can afford to keep.
If you are outspending Fortnite, you are doing something wrong.
You are the problem.
You are the problem.
Not your
like,
staff.
You are the
like,
problem.
There's something wrong with how you're running the company. So I don't know. I thought the story was really weird.
It's really sad that a lot of the layoffs are coming not from like core Epic ones, but like businesses they've acquired. So it seems like most, if not all, of Mediatonic just got completely gutted. And that's like, that's the creators of one of the most viral games of this generation in Fall Guys, and they're just gone. Like, I think this will give a lot of studios pause before they decide to sign with Epic in the future.
Well, because even given, I don't know, given the Unity thing that happened a while back, what's to stop?
Well, just in general, like Epic bought Mediatonic, and they bought like Psyonix, who did Rocket League and whatever. And at the time, everyone's like, that's a good move. You know, you're an indie dev, you get stability. Now, this is not stability.
I know, but
if you can just be completely shuttered like
No, but that's what I'm saying. As was like the way Unity slapped on fees, which like caused huge backlash. I mean, what's to stop Epic from changing the whole Unreal Engine at some stage, going, like, this is how we course correct the fact that we're outspending. I don't know. It's very sad to see. And it's just very shocking because you think Epic, and then they're cutting 16% of staff. That's a huge number.
It's 900 jobs. It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. Yeah.
It's a whole studio for most AAA studios aren't even that large.
No, that's
it's crazy.
Very sad to see. In other free to play news, quickly, Counter-Strike 2 is out now.
Tell me about it.
This is amazing, purely because I knew Counter-Strike 2 was coming out at some stage. I didn't realize, I don't know if it had a hard release date.
I think they teased it last week. They were like teasing something last week.
Just on a day that like it's out. Here's a launch trailer.
Yeah, there was some CSGO like competition happening, and people were waiting for that to end, and then they dropped it at the end of that. I saw people on Slack talking about it.
So what's quite surprising is that it makes sense, but Counter-Strike, the previous game, CSGO, Counter-Strike Global Offensive, no longer exists on Steam. It's just been replaced with Counter-Strike 2, for better or for worse. Like, it's funny because I think I read an article just this morning of somebody saying it's a bit weird because this game's launched and it's missing some features that were in the previous game, but you can't even access the previous game. So like, it just is what it is.
I think it's a smart way to do it because you can't have both running.
I completely agree, but I almost feel then why don't you launch a game with an equivalent set of features, for example? I don't know. Maybe it's stuff that's going to be added. But like, Also some criticisms, like there's not a single new map, there's no new weapons, but I don't know, maybe they had to get
it's
this.
It's also
launch.
Free.
It's free, yeah. No, Counter-Strike was free. CSGO was free.
CSGO you had to purchase, didn't you?
No, it was at a stage years ago you had to purchase it, but then it did have a free-to-play model where basically what happened is if you were new to the game, you could play it for free, but you would get prioritized into like a lower tier of matchmaking.
Right.
And then if you bought CSGO, you'd get like a prime or whatever it is, you know, like a premium account, and then you were kicked out of that lower priority pool of matchmaking.
I think what I'm saying is like they've updated it to CSGO 2 and like people are being like critical, like, new weapons and maps. It's like, okay,
it's free.
But it's it's on a whole new engine.
Yeah.
And they overhauled like the way the server handles, you know, latency and ticks. Like that's a gigantic change.
No.
Yeah. So I think people need to calm down. Like you didn't have to pay for this update.
No, but also it doesn't mean that stuff will never happen. Like I almost feel that.
Of course, 100%.
I almost feel that this is they've like moved over to the new Source engine, whatever, and you know, this is just the first step. Maybe they are going to include other. I mean, I imagine they will. It's a Counter-Strike game. They're going to support it for like the next 10 years, probably, if not longer. And they're going to add
stuff to it. I'll give you the perspective of someone who works in software. The bigger an update, the more terrifying it is.
Yeah.
Because there are so many more potential things that can break. So if you are moving something wholesale from one engine to another, and you are changing the fundamental way it works in calculating like shots online. Those two things alone are big enough changes that you just want that to get out there, let people fuck around with it, let it settle and feel like you have a base before you start pumping. If you go there with now like, cool, there's five maps, there's these weapons, there's these. Now you've got all these other variables of like, okay, well, when there's a problem, it could be so many other things contributing to that problem. So I think this is a totally fine way for them to go about things. Like they, like you said, they will add more stuff. Of course they will.
Yeah.
Like that it's not all there on the first day, it's totally fine. Yeah. If they were charging you $20 for this, totally fine, then you can have criticism. But this is a free update. Like it is what it is.
It is what it is. So I'm very keen to dive into that at some stage in my life. there's not so many releases. And then last few pieces of news. This one is hilarious and sad at the same time. Scalpers swarmed the Van Gogh Museum for a Pikachu promo card.
That poor museum probably didn't know what the fuck was going on.
So if you don't know, the Van Gogh Museum and Pokemon Company have partnered for a very...
Van Gogh Museum is in Amsterdam,
Amsterdam,
correct?
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
They've partnered for a very cute... exhibition, Pokemon inspired exhibition.
So like, cute.
What a, as someone who works in marketing, even if you don't, what a power move, like what a clever idea, like just, I don't know, just genius, putting these cute little pocket monsters as like classic paintings in a museum.
It's so cute.
But the problem is that this whole exhibition has a custom promo card, which people know be worth some cash monies, if not today, in future, like worth a lot of money. So of course scalpers are out there trying to
that card is unbelievably cute though. I fucking love it so much, like in the Van Gogh paint style with the Pikachu and a Van Gogh hat. It's so good.
Yeah
So good.
Real good.
Yeah, they had like a little pop-up Pokemon center there, and you could purchase like a Pikachu plush in Van Gogh gear.
So cute.
And
look at that.
And the promo card came with any one of these, so that's how people were going absolutely mental. So I think they've actually posted since being like all the shit sold out already. But I think they hadn't instigated a one item per person limit on the first day, and that's why it was such a shit show.
Good luck.
Hate to see it.
And then last bit of news, new Lies of P update includes various changes to make the game easier. So when you shared this news in our Discord this week, And we all immediately thought, cool, they've added like difficulty sliders or something to make the game more accessible for people like Darren, who desperately want to try this game, but just don't like the thoughts of being told to get good. But that's not the case. Turns out they just made the game easier. Like they've patched
it. Kind of nuts to me. Yeah. kind of wild. So they did things like decreasing HP, increasing like the chance of stagger, stuff like that.
Yeah. So it's just unusual for a game like this to have a change like that. And you best believe, now this upsets me, you best believe there'll be people going like, ah, yes, I played Liza P when it was still difficult.
Oh, of course. Like I was telling you then, From always tweaked things in Elden Ring. They never outright said, we are making this boss easier, but they would be like, tweak the health thing for balance reasons. And they'll be like, yep, they made it easier. There we go. I beat him when he wasn't easy. And it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, go away.
Yeah, but this is interesting. This is a game I still want to desperately want to play.
Whole paragraph here where they've just like, they've got like six bullet points of them decreasing the HP of bosses, which is wild.
Decrease the HP of fallen archbishop. Decreased HP, that's a lot. Players will now be able to carry more weight for each. I mean, they've made this game too easy. Don't even bother playing it now.
Go play Crash Bandicoot. That's harder.
But this game looks good. It has been received well, and I cannot wait to play it. But
Ivan me.
That is even me. News for this week. Look at us. We Look brought it us. Back. We might just be in time over here.
We've still got questions. If you want to send us a question, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on social media at checkpointchat.
So we have, I know we've got an email and a question on Instagram. We have a question from Jared Brapra. Says, hey guys, do you use NVIDIA DLSS or AMD FSR in your playthroughs where available? What are your thoughts? Ciao.
Yes. I use DLSS all the time.
Don't know how you do not use DLSS in modern day gaming, I think.
DLSS, even if a game is running well, if it offers DLSS, it usually offers something called DLAA, which means it's using the DLSS algorithm, but it's not rendering at a lower resolution. It's rendering at the same resolution at you. So it's a form of anti-aliasing that's often better than traditional anti-aliasing, and I use that all the time. I use DLSS. I really, if you put it on quality or balanced, like I cannot perceive a difference, and the performance is better. So I'm always in on that stuff.
Same. I mean, it depends what settings you put on, and because there are sliders that you can dictate the resolution.
You can properly break a game if you put it too low.
If you put it too low, then it's like visibly like, oof, let's not play with DLSS. Mm-hmm. But if you have that, like I said, there are presets like balanced or performance. Generally, those are both absolutely fine. And it just fixes your game. Like a good example. Sorry, yeah?
No, carry on.
I was going to say in Starfield is like, it's sad that it doesn't have DLSS because the AMD.
There's a mod.
There's a mod, but I'm saying if you don't mod it, like the AMD equivalence is just not great.
It's also a very old FSR implementation in Starfield. So the FSR stuff is like, FSR 2 is definitely better. It's nowhere near DLSS still, for obvious reasons. It's not using neural networks to upscale. It's a very linear upscaler. So the benefit of FSR is that it works on anything, I guess. So it's more accessible, but it's definitely not as good. So I do prefer when a game has both. I would love to fuck around with the newer DLSS stuff that's only available on the 40 series cards, like the frame generation. I think, when that initially came out, it was kind of like broken and busted. But since then, it's like been incredible. I've seen people playing Cyberpunk using that path tracing mode, so like the ridiculous ray tracing stuff, and then they use frame generation to keep it above like 80, 90 or whatever, and it's just kind of mental. It's really cool. Features, yeah. I'm hoping that the new Switch using NVIDIA stuff uses DLSS. I suspect that that those sorts of settings won't be surfaced to the user like they are on a PC.
Backend, yeah.
But I think if they're given to a developer who can then be like, cool, I'm going to push this game graphically on the Switch, but now I can depend on DLSS to help keep performance at a good level. Like, I'm pretty sure we're going to see a lot of that.
You're telling me we're going to get Mario with ray tracing? Because I'm there.
Oh, hell yeah.
Imagine those lights reflecting.
The Mario Sunshine remake you never thought, where all the water reflects everything.
Oh my God. It's in the name. ray tracing on Sunshine. Let's see what you did there. Good job. We have another question that came in earlier this week from good pal Milesh from the other side of the planet down under, who asks a question just for Sandy. What's the reason for having someone else on the GameSpot staff narrate your reviews instead of you doing it yourself? 200 and something episodes later, you clearly have no issues with speaking and recording your voice. Is it just a time or logistics issue, or were they not keen on the delicious South African accent?
Yeah, they hate the accent.
Really?
No, I'm joking. No.
If you're straight up like,
they fucking hate the accent.
Darren and I just can't do it because they're like, no.
It's not like they have a history of like completely different accents on the videos from American to British to Australian. But no, it's nothing to do with the accent. It's a logistics thing. It's like partly my fault as well. Like I'm friends with one of the senior video producers there at GameSpot, Jake Decker, and he actually a few months ago now asked me this very question. He's like, hey, do you not want to do voiceovers for your videos? And I was like, I've never been offered, so I've never asked, but I'd be keen. So he's like, cool, send a voice sample and we'll get the ball rolling. I don't think I ever sent that voice sample. so I just never did that. It's a time thing. It's like reviews are done with such fine timelines, especially when they're for bigger games, that it's just way easier for someone that side to take a draft. They have a studio there, record it. It's then there. They don't need to wait on me. Yeah. You know, time zone differences.
It's less pressure
and all
on
that.
You
so
as well.
Less pressure on me, yeah, as well. Like there've been times where I've edited a review for a script for a video, because often the review is too long for like the voiceover for video, so you'll see it's truncated quite a bit. And even just editing that is like takes time, because you have to still keep the gist of the critique in there, but like shave out like 500 words, and it's like, well, how the fuck do I do that? Yeah. You know. So yeah, you know, I do that sometimes. Sometimes that's done that side. It's a time thing. It's trust me, there is no slight against my accent or me. And I'm perfectly happy with the good people like Lucy James and Tamur Hussein, who have done this stuff tons to take over the narration for the video. They do a fantastic job.
Cool. I think that is all the questions for this week. Let me just double check. There's nothing on Twitter, nothing on Facebook. I think that is it.
Yeah. Awesome. We somehow did bring this back. I don't know how we managed that.
I think we normally actually spend a lot of time on news, and we were a lot snappier today.
Yeah, that's true. So we just, we spoke about Jim Ryan and we had to get away from that.
Like, Jim Ryan's no longer there. Next piece of news. Like, let's get it out of here.
If you want to send us questions, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com or at checkpointchat or social media. That's been episode 235 of Checkpoint Chat. If you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week we might actually be back in the middle of the week with a sneaky little reviews for Assassin's Creed Mirage and Forza Motorsport. Vroom vroom. Look out for those. This is busy season, so I bet we'll be doing a bit more of that.
Yeah.
Because like embargoes just don't line up with when we fucking publish things. So
no. And that content will typically live on YouTube.
Yeah. So, I don't know if we'll put that on the podcast. We'll see.
We'll discuss.
We'll see. But that will definitely be on YouTube for sure. So,
like episode 236, the prequel, coming to an audio platform new. Yeah, we'll chat about it.
Thank you so much for listening. And we will see you next time on Checkpoint Chat. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Bye.